It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented by our great friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999, and you can check out a free estimate if you pick up the phone today and dial 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price and Brent Hubbs. Got a lot to get into today. Plenty of your mailbag questions, so we won't waste any more time. Let's start with Smokey Gray. Can anyone explain how the talent fee added to season tickets plays into NIL? Will those monies be added to the collective offers, or how exactly will this work?
Well, I mean, you're going into the rev share world, AP, where universities have to have $22 million is basically what that number is going to end up being. And you're trying to find that money from everywhere. That's why that's why there's a mandate on campus and in the athletic department to try to cut expenses in certain places to try to offset some operating costs to help with your financial burden that the $22 million figure comes with. And it's actually more than that when you factor in scholarships, but we'll call it at that price right now. And the talent fee is going to go into that bucket is where it's going to go to for the rev share.
Yeah, that's right. It just goes into one big bucket. That's the easiest way to put it. You know, it goes to the pay student athletes. You know, you'll never know exactly, you know, where your dollar went, who your dollar went to pay. Maybe it went to pay, you know, the star Lady Vol basketball player. Maybe it went to pay Nico. Maybe it went to pay, you know, the star pitcher on the baseball team. It's just, it goes into one big pile. But you're right. They're trying to trim the fat across the country at all schools. You know, most schools went to from one ply to half a ply toilet paper over there on campus. I mean, like, you know, wherever they can trim a dollar or two. And so, I mean, that's, you know, that just kind of is what it is. And right now they're all just trying to get to a point where, you know, they can, you know, get some of this stuff done. Georgia, they changed their state law. You've seen a few others, Ohio being another one, where they can, you know, the NCAA can't say that, you know, the University of Georgia can't pay its student athletes. I would say Tennessee's trying to get that done as well. At the end of the day, that's, you know, it just helps everybody when, you know, the universities can all of a sudden start kicking in to the pile.
But at the end of the day, going back to this question, the talent fee and all that, I mean, the money going in the bucket, that is not, you know, collective driven name, image, and likeness. That's something different. This is a revenue share. This is something new that everybody's dealing with, and that's kind of the talent fee.
Yeah, it's not going to Spire. It's university money. It goes into the university's bucket for rev share. And this is the anticipation of what's coming, whether the house settlement happens or not. We're moving into a world of rev share. Everybody in the country is preparing for that. So that's where your talent fee is. That's where the talent fee money is going, is it's going into the rev share bucket of the university.
Crayon's got a couple of questions. We spoke about this briefly on Tuesday, Brent. You actually had a little bit of a solution, but how do you fix the transfer portal? Can it be fixed considering the enrollment for your next school? Lay out your plan if you were calling the shots that you spoke about on Tuesday.
Well, here's the off the top of the head plan I had, and then I read Andy Staples' plan last night. My off the top plan was, hey, can you do the portal in 2 weeks, you know, from January the 2nd through the 14th or the 15th, something like that, where you give kids 2 weeks to take visits, make a decision, and then they can get in school somewhere, because a lot of schools don't start until the middle of January. Some start early, but with the drop ad deadline, you could make that work. Now, I don't know if you guys read Andy Staples' piece last night that he had it on three, which is a pretty interesting concept of eliminating the winter portal window completely and revamping spring practice and taking spring practice and making it true NFL style OTAs, where you got 15 OTA days that you could do in May and June if you wanted to. And then you would transfer at the end of the spring semester, and then you would be somewhere to go through a spring practice, essentially, or the OTAs, to learn the system, and then you go from there. And that eliminates the issue of the spring academic semester of everybody trying to get somewhere in January. Now, Andy admits strength coaches aren't going to like that, right? Because AP, you lose 3 or 4 months of bringing a guy in and developing that way. But, you know, Andy threw that out there as something to think about, because he says it's a lot easier to move the football calendar than you're ever going to be able to move an academic calendar, which I thought was an interesting concept as well.
Yeah, I mean, the way you two are breaking down kind of plans, you know, I'm expecting a economic plan. You guys are turning into politicians. I mean, you know, I mean, Staples Hubs 2028 is what I got. You're right. I mean, here's the other thing. Like when you move it back like that, you know, how does it affect, you know, summertime recruiting? How does it affect, you know, the official visit calendar in June that we've all kind of learned to embrace and understand? And that's kind of where this whole thing's at. I mean, the calendar's constantly shifting. The problem is it's not like they, at least I've not seen them take, okay, here's this puzzle piece and we're going to move it over here. But because we moved it over here, we're going to take this and move it over here. Like, it's all of a sudden they just have like puzzle pieces stacked on top of one another in different worlds and in different spots. And it just, to me, like, you're just, I get robbing Peter to pay Paul, maybe. Like, I mean, you're just moving things around without any kind of real solution.
Well, and I think, Eric, when you look at the calendar, the biggest thing that jumps out is the calendar. Nothing in the calendar has moved in the right direction. And I think this is sort of what AP's saying as well, has moved in the right direction to ease the burden for anybody. The calendar has been moving in the wrong direction for multiple years. You know, it's the speed up of everything that you're going into now makes it hard. And it's a problem. And if they don't get it fixed, I mean, I'm no James Franklin fan, right? I mean, I'm not. I don't think he's a bad football coach. But I totally agree with what he said about the situation involving his backup quarterback transferring. Like, my guy didn't have a choice. He wanted to stay and help his team, but he knew if he waited, then he wasn't going to land anywhere. He had to get in the portal and go take visits now while we're preparing for the playoffs, because if he doesn't, all the spots are going to be taken up for him.
And the truth is, Hubbard, like, the more that, like, you know, James Franklin, Rhett Lashley, these coaches that are competing for a national championship scream and cry right now, the better chance that you maybe get some of this stuff, you know, at least put enough, you know, spotlight on it to get something changed. Because, I mean, Rhett Lashley was right. I mean, like, in no other sport do you have free agency while the season's still going on. But because of the fact that at the end of the day, guess what? This is still an institution. Kids still have to go to school. The academic calendar doesn't change. In a perfect world, you play the end of the season, January 20th it ends, free agency starts after that, and kids can kind of come and go. But they can't do that because the academic calendar drop ad dates. By mid-January, I mean, most of these schools have started and are, you know, kind of barreling down the hill at a drop ad date for kids to you know, get on campus if they're not already on campus. So,
well, and I think the other thing too, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think the other thing too, when you look at, and I, you know, diving into Andy Staples' thought process last night a little bit too, is how many coaches have we talked to that they want the roster set earlier, not later? That they don't like the spring portal window because they want to know what the roster looks like at the end of spring practice or going into spring practice. They would like to know that their roster is set, say, February 1st. If you push everything back, then you're going to have a lot of roster movement at the end of May. Well, how does that change what you're recruiting and what you're looking for? You know, I mean, it's kind of like you're talking about, are you making the puzzle or are you just moving the pieces around? Are you just turning it around to see maybe if it fits somewhere, but it all doesn't match up? I mean, they have a real problem. Whether anybody wants to admit it or not, there's a problem with this calendar. The solution is not very simple at all.
I'm going to jump around here for a moment because while we're on this subject, one of T. Franz's questions says this: could you envision a college football landscape where the student athlete title is removed, being a student isn't required, and players are just representatives or employees at the university? That would help. Would that help in court to be able to enforce binding contracts and make the timeline more manageable in regards to the transfer portal? Football is the only sport where attending higher education is required to make it pros. Is this outdated? Wouldn't that be something where you take this?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could go to Europe and play basketball and come back, you know, and be a pro the whole time in basketball as opposed to the 1 year thing. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if college football is going to mean you don't ever have to go to class and you don't have to be a student, then let's blow it up and let's let the Titans and the Cowboys and the Eagles and all those teams create their minor league system, you know, AAA NFL football. Let's go have a draft of high school kids, and then a bunch of kids don't get to play football at the next level. because you're only going to draft what you're going to draft coming out of high school to build your roster for the future. And then obviously higher education doesn't become about sports. There's no element to sports in higher education. You just blow the whole thing up. I don't think that's realistic.
I think the most realistic thing would be if you could get all the academic side on board with, okay, hey, listen, we're going to, you know, nobody can go into the portal until the season ends. They've got 2 weeks. And if somebody changes, you know, schools, you've got to be willing to figure out how to get them in and make them get them academically ready by February 10th. I don't know if that's doable, but like under Tennessee's late start, that probably is way more doable than somebody who starts like January 10th, right? Like it's 2 full weeks behind.
Well, Ohio State starts the 6th.
Huh?
Ohio State starts the 6th of January.
There you go.
So you would be 6 weeks behind. You'd be almost a half a semester behind if you go into mid-February, if you go into the academic world that way, which is why Andy's model, maybe coaches have to deal with the fact that, hey, it's on you to get guys ready in a short period of time. But again, I mean, to me, something has to give, but it's not going to give, no offense to Marshall, till some big-name guys, starters, legit starter guys, at playoff schools shut it down and say, I'm not playing. No offense to the backup quarterback at Penn State. Is that moving the needle for decision makers?
Yeah, or, I mean, especially the playoffs. But, like, I mean, I said this on Tuesday. Like, again, no disrespect to Marshall, but what if Alabama couldn't play in a bowl game this year? You know, that would get people's attention, right? I mean, I know they're not in the playoffs, but Alabama's much different than Marshall, Alabama or Michigan or whoever.
Or what if one of the biggest name players in college football who has another year of eligibility, who is going to come back to college or has to come back to college, all of a sudden says, you know, my agent says, if I don't get a new deal, I'm not playing in the playoff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, like 2 days before the game, somebody loses their best player. I mean, these are all things because these agents control so much. I mean, you know, you heard the other day when we interviewed, the Moy kid, who's transferred from Arizona. You ask him just, you know, kind of, you know, where do you go from here? And he said, well, you need to talk to my agent. Like, I mean, like the agents have a lot of power. So, like, you know, they're in this constant state of negotiation because of the way this whole thing's structured. At some point, something like that's going to happen. I don't know if it's this year, 5 years from now, unless you see some change. But at some point, you're going to see something like that happen where a kid just plays hardball and says, I'm not going to play this weekend in the semifinal, you know, because I want a new deal. And if I don't get a new deal, I'm not playing.
Yeah, and that's going to be just awful. Go back to a couple more from Crayon. What is the outlook for the 2026 conference schedule? Will 26-27 be like 24-25 in terms of the flipping, same opponents, flipping home away venues? Man, I hope not, right? I mean, this is just kind of like to buy them a little time so they can figure it out. I think we can all can agree that 9 conference games is probably tabled right now because of what happened this football season. But what are your thoughts on what 2026 schedule will look like? And should it be the same as 27 but flipped?
I hope they don't do it that way, but I think they're going to kick the can down the road again. Until you find out about expansion in the playoffs, AP, and trying to get ADs in a room to agree on scheduling in terms of, are you going to require a Power 4 team? Are you going to go 8? Are you going to go 9? What are you going to do? I don't think anybody's going to come out of AD meetings in January heading into spring meetings in May and say, okay, we have a solution to this. So I don't know. I mean, there's a chance they could do it like they've just done it the last 2 years. I hope that's not the case. But there is I would not rule that possibility completely out. I know Sankey wants the idea that guys get to play in every venue during their 4-year time at Tennessee, but I don't think you're getting there until you decide what you're doing with 8 and 9 games. And right now I don't see 9 games as a possibility, but I don't think you're going to say it's going to be 8 forever. Right. So does it need to be 9 and 27, you know, or, you know, is there going to be more money on the table in 26? I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's a great question, but I don't know what they're going to do. I hope it's not what we're doing these past 2 years.
Yeah. What is your favorite Tennessee tradition? Mine's running through the tee before the game. I mean, I don't do that, but watching it and all that, that's mine. What say you?
For me, Hubbard, it's the band saluting the hill. I love the Vol walk and all that.
AP gets goosebumps, man. We'll be standing there like, watch this.
I like that. There's a pageantry to it. There's a reason I like the Rose Bowl. There's a pageantry to that. There's a pageantry to the band saluting the hill. I just enjoy that. Everybody wants to talk about Run Through the T or the Vol walk. And don't get me wrong, like, Vol walk's cool, man. 2008, I had a chance, literally, when I was, you know, filming and doing a lot of TV work at the time, I went right down in front of Phil Fulmer. Rick Russo had a hold of my belt. I'm walking backwards down Peyton Manning Pass, and I'm literally, you know, me to the screen here, you know, from Philip. And I'm the whole way in the, you know, however you remember that. I mean, the fans just lined that thing, and it was a tight quarters. Like, it ain't like now where there's like 20 yards in between the fans. Right. You know, I mean, this was a totally different day. And so, like, that's super neat. And that was a super neat moment to be, to be involved in. But I love when the band salutes the hill. When they come across the pedestrian bridge, they come down. I just think that's neat.
I mean, selfishly for me, my favorite time in that stadium is before it opens because I get there stupid early. Just kind of the calm and the storm before everything blows up.
When he's eating his biscuit.
Yeah, when I'm eating my biscuit. But, you know, just kind of walk around, take it in, you know, super early. It's something I get to experience that not everybody else gets to experience. But in terms of what everybody else has experienced, I mean, when the band starts to form the tee, it's a different deal. But particularly when you're outside or the window's open and you can feel it, you can hear it. It's a really cool thing. I think it's a really neat tradition. I wish they would hold it together a little tighter and not open it up immediately. I think it builds a little crescendo there, but. When they start to move into formation for the tee, it's go time. So I guess that's a moment that stands out to me.
D.D. Henry, 42, thoughts on freshman wide receivers we brought in this cycle and if any of those guys could be immediate impact players in the rotation next year or if we need to pursue more for depth purposes. Who could be ready, which in your opinion need a year or more or two in the weight room to contribute?
I mean – I don't think you really know. I mean, Travis Smith's a big kid, right? He is a big receiver. He's going to have a head start here of 7 or 8 months before the season starts to put on weight, to put on muscle. I think he and, you know, Rodarius Jackson physically are going to be ahead of where Joakim Dodson is. Joakim Dodson is also not like tiny, but like, I mean, I don't think any of them are just like, none of them are Squirrel White walking in the door at 150. You know, I mean, I think they're all a little bit bigger, especially Jackson and Travis Smith.
All right, guys, another question here from D.D. Henry, 42. Any jobs pop up around the country you think Tim Banks or other Vol staff members might be interested in that we should watch out for?
I mean, no, because I don't know what jobs are going to come open. You know, I mean, Tim Banks is only going to be able to get a certain level of job as a first-time head coach, in my opinion. So, like, normally that's going to result, however, with a lot less pay than he's going to make to be the defense coordinator here, which goes back to how bad does he want to be a head coach?
Yes. You know, here's the other thing you don't know, too. We spent the first 10 minutes of this podcast talking about how bad the calendar is and how bad everything is off. Remember what happens following Christmas, right? You got Black Monday coming in the NFL. What turnover is there and what is the trickle down for assistants, not for head coaches or even coordinators? What's the trickle down for assistants? Does somebody say, you know what? I want out. You know what? I mean, we've seen that in the past happen around the country. Does somebody say, I've had enough of the college game and the calendar and everything it is. I want to coach ball and finds themselves in an NFL job somewhere. I don't know. There's not a real answer to that question right now because you just don't know what else might be coming down the pike. As for Banks, Austin's 100% right, Eric, in terms of how bad does he want to be a head coach versus how bad does he want to be here.
Old Coach wants to know if this happens, UT wins. He said, in my opinion, the team that plays the best in the red zone on offense wins. Tennessee's like 10th of 12 playoff teams in red zone efficiency, not one of the better teams in that regard. Ohio State is number one in red zone efficiency. Ohio State's a really good red zone offense team. Both teams are really good in the red zone on defense. I would agree with them there, but what else? If Tennessee does this, Tennessee wins.
Well, I would take it a little step further than the red zone. I think it's what do you do with the football from, say, the 35-yard line in. Tennessee's missed way too many opportunities in conference play when they've gotten the ball into that area that didn't result in any points. They didn't get a field goal out of it. They didn't score a touchdown. And I think this is going to be a low scoring game. That's my belief. I don't think it's going to be a shootout. I think it's going to be a low scoring game. So if you have the ball at the 35 yard line or the 25 yard line, do you come away with points of some kind there? Not just red zone, but do you come away with points in that area of the field? Tennessee's missed too many of those opportunities. So I think that's something. Here's the other thing too, Austin, and I may be wrong on this. I just think that Ohio State's going to play a little more sideline to sideline offensively than what they did in the Michigan game. I think they're going to throw screens. I think they're going to run some jet sweeps. I think they're going to try to get their guys on the edge in space instead of just putting their head down and trying to run between the tackles, because I'm not sure they feel great about that opportunity. I think they're going to try to play some speed game out on the perimeter. How does Tennessee play in space?
Yeah, and that's a great question. Ohio State athletically is every bit the SEC team that most Big Ten teams are not. It will be something similar to what Tennessee's faced all year. I think that the place kicker for Ohio State, maybe, he's coming off one of his worst performances. He had some bad misses against Michigan. How does that, play a role into this game, especially if he misses one early? That could come down to, we saw what happened earlier in the year when Max Gilbert had a little bit of a slump, and then he snapped back out of it and has been fantastic ever since. So, what does he look like in this game? I just think Tennessee's, can't give Ohio State big plays. If Ohio State's going to score, they got to drive the field, score a 10-yard touchdown, not score a 67-yard touchdown. So they've been really good at that all year long. Ohio State, though, is really, really dynamic at wide receiver.
End of the day, and this is one of the many keys, I understand that. I mean, Tennessee's got to get pressure on Will Howard.
I think this is James Pierce's game.
Yeah.
We've been waiting all year long for him to show up. Now, Ohio State's really good at tackle, but James Pierce, this is a game that can show up right here near the end of the year. I don't know. I just call it a hunch, call it a feeling. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe I ate something, but there's a feeling for me that just says James Pierce is going to show up in this game more than he has at any point during the season.
Yeah, big players make big plays in big games, right? Kind of one of those mantras, and they move him around. They do some twist turns. Sometimes they stand him up over the center. Going back to what Brent said earlier in the week, and I kind of broke this down in a story that's on the site. What Ohio State has been at left guard this year has truly been incredible. They've had four different guys start games at left guard. You look at the, take it for what it is, right? But I look at it for snap counts and sacks and pressures allowed. The guards, center, and then right guard, who's started every game. He's been consistent, but he's not very good. Like the pressures and sacks and hits allowed on your quarterback. That interior of the offensive line, especially with Seth McLaughlin out, what an opportunity there for Tennessee's defense. So, at the end of the day, you've got to get after Will Howard, make him accelerate that clock a little bit. Tennessee did not do that against Georgia. And Carson Beck looked like the Carson Beck everybody talked about all offseason long. You got to get after the quarterback for sure. Go back to T. Franz. Who's your playoff sleeper? I would say Notre Dame, Indiana at home, Georgia, possibly without Beck, and then Penn State seems feasible to get a championship for a 7th seed. Who would be your playoff sleeper?
Anybody on the lower bracket. The lower bracket is a far – because Georgia, looks like it won't have Beck. I just don't see the kid. Maybe I'm will be wrong and he'll be out there with the brace on and he plays, but it just doesn't feel like he's going to be there. And if he's not there, that bottom side is dramatically weaker and way more open for a Penn State or a Notre Dame to make a run.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Notre Dame certainly on the bottom side would be – I don't know that they're a sleeper team, but I think if Georgia's limited there – Georgia's defense travels, though. And can they – but, do they run the ball well enough? I'll say this, too. I think the winner of Tennessee-Ohio State could certainly make some noise there. I think Ohio State against – if they were to upset – or if they were to beat Tennessee – it's hard to beat a team twice in the same year. They get Oregon again. What does that look like? Oregon's defense didn't do anything to wow me against Penn State, so that's going to be a shootout type game. That would be an interesting deal. But I think the whole bottom side of the bracket's got sleeper teams in it because it's the top half is so much heavier, you know, loaded, I think, than the bottom half of the bracket is. So, you know, we'll see.
Are you going to give anything to the Clemson upsetting Texas?
I'm not, because I don't think Clemson can do enough offensively. Here's the thing about Texas. Texas shot themselves in the foot so bad against Georgia in the SEC championship game in the first half by not finishing drives. I don't know that happens again. I'm curious to see, does Texas use Arch Manning in different ways? And what did Sarkisian learn from that SEC championship game? Because they had a chance to knock Georgia pretty good early in that game, right? I mean, their defense was really good. I just don't know that Clemson can score enough there. And again, Clemson showed some vulnerability when SMU came roaring back in that game. I don't know that Clemson can do enough consistently offensively.
Where are you at health wise as well in the backfield? Got a good tailback, but he's not nearly 100%. He needs to have a game if you're going to pull out that upset. Plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on, we got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Again, that phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Local and trusted since 1999.
Just seeing that commercial warms me up because it looks so nice, green grass, warm outside. And today, and we're getting ready to go into 20 degrees Saturday.
I got all my batteries on charge, JP. I got all my batteries on charge.
It's about to be 26 years, not 25 years, 26 years.
Hey, this is Travis Thompson, one of the new owners at North Lake Boat Store in La Follette, Tennessee. Love to have you come up and check out our Christmas sale. We have 50% off on all of our stuff in the pro shop. We carry Ranger, Starcraft. You can find us online at NorthLakeBoatStore.com or on Facebook at North Lake Boat Store. Happy holidays.
We'll get back into it. Dr. VFL 93 wants us to play a little over under for Saturday night. So let's. I'm going to give you a stat here. Let's say over or under. Defensive offsides penalties by the Volunteers. 2.5, I'll say under, but it's going to be more than one, Brent Hubbs.
I'll set it at 2. I'll say it. So I guess I'm taking the under. I don't think it'll be 3. I think it'll be 2.
Under.
Sampson fumbles, 0.5. I'll say under. He holds on to the ball.
I've Hubbs has heard me say this all week. Like the whole, like the ball gets, you know, really hard and slick with it being 20 degrees.
It gets hard. I don't know about slick. It feels like a rock.
It'll get hard. It'll get slick too. I hope he doesn't fumble, but I mean, like, you know, the last handful of games makes you wonder. I'll just go under just because I'm trying to put the good juju out there in the universe.
I'm taking the under because he's healthy. I think with, rested up, everything back under him, not beat up so much. I think he's going to be in better physical shape. And so I'm going to take the under on this one.
I haven't looked at the numbers for Henderson and Judkins in terms of fumbles, but I mean, that ball is going to be the same one that they're using as well in the cold. So, you know, fumbling will be something to watch out for. ACC officiating crew giving OSU first downs, taking Vol first downs away. 4.5 bad spots, I guess is the question.
Is he saying bad spots, or is he saying phantom flags, or is he just saying officiating is bad?
Maybe all the above. Essentially, he's saying the officials taking down first downs away from Tennessee.
I mean, in the eyes of both sets of fans, AP, this officiating crew is going to be awful because this officiating crew. Listen, it's funny. Somebody posted this deal, and I don't know if it's in this, if the question's in here or not. But they pointed out. This crew worked the Virginia Tech Miami game.
It is. Yep.
Okay. Well, what are you mad about? I mean, they called the Hail Mary a score and it got overturned by review, right?
Correct.
So like those officials, if you're pulling for Virginia Tech, they got it right. Why are you mad at that crew? That was the review crew that changed the outcome of that game, which we all think is a bad, you know, many of us think is a bad call, or certainly a highly debatable call. Was there enough evidence to overturn it there? Listen, I get it. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be happy with officiating. What Tennessee's got to do, Austin, is they've got to help themselves and not commit the obvious fouls that are not officiating mistakes, jumping off sides, false starts, those type of things. What I'm curious to see in this game is how much does this crew allow physicality down the field with the receivers and DBs in one-on-one passing situation? Are they going to let them grab and hold all night long, or are they going to call grab and holds? I think that sets a direction and a course that this game could go in some ways as well. That's one I'm watching early.
OSU missed field goals, 1.5.
Under.
Yeah, under.
Under. Vol sacks recorded, 3.5.
I'm going to go over. I'm telling you, James Pierce, I'm beating that drum.
I'll go over just to get those vibes out there.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll join you guys now.
Yeah, I guess I'll do it too. Vol extra point lineman injuries, 2.5. This one's interesting because we talk under. About tempo. How quickly is Tennessee going to score? I'll go under 2.5.
I hope it's over because that means Tennessee scored a bunch of touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm taking the under on that one.
Yeah, I'll take
it. They haven't had that many this year in a game, so I'm taking the under.
Vol man 98, best shot at getting back next year, Joshua Josephs or Bryson Eason?
Both.
Oh, AP's feeling it today. I'm going to ride AP's coattails.
Love it. Power T, have you ever been asked by the staff or previous – here's the question I was talking about earlier. Have you ever been asked by this staff or a previous staff to plant a question in a press conference setting?
No. I mean, I've asked the questions I've wanted to ask, so.
Yeah. No from me.
No, I mean, correct. I think we've all asked questions that the coach probably wanted us to ask without him asking. if we go into a press conference and we know said coach is really perturbed about a said subject, we tee them up and then let them go. Like we don't have to be told. Like if I know, you know, Josh Heupel's upset about officiating, you just kind of throw it out there, throw a little chum in the water and see what he does with it. You know, there you go. Look at it. But I mean, like, you know, you don't have to be asked. You just kind of, we have good enough relationships to know, like, where they're, when they're like talking behind the scenes about a certain this or that. And, you know, you can kind of just fill it out. And sometimes they don't go for it. Sometimes they do.
And sometimes it's funny just to ask a question to see what they say. Like if you want to ask Tony Vitello about a certain coach he's about to coach against and see if he'll, you know, say anything nice about the coach, or he'll talk about everybody else on staff but the coach you ask him about. That's always funny. How do the playoffs work from a revenue standpoint? I think you said the schools were only obligated to allot 3,500 tickets to opposing schools. What other things has the NCAA said that will happen at stadiums to make it more equal?
I don't have the numbers in front of me in terms of what the payout is, you know, per – based on playoff games, but obviously it's handsome. And then the travel allotment's handsome. I don't know. AP, you were talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. I mean, there's obviously some limitations, I think, in some of the signages that they can do and some of the advertising and different things that they can do. I don't know what all the limitations are in terms of what you can do with a game atmosphere, but there are definitely some limitations that you can do at a home venue.
Yeah, again, I think a lot of it is just, you know, the aesthetics of it all. Like, luckily, like, nobody, you know, everybody had a brain and said, you know, we're not going to keep, you know, if the game's at Tennessee, they're going to run through the T. If they're at Ohio State, they're going to dot the I. If they're at Michigan, they're going to run under the banner. Like, I mean, if you're going to have home games, you want them to be as much like a home game as you can be, even if you limit some of the, like, stuff that goes up on the Jumbotron or any of that type of thing.
I still can't get over hosting an NCAA Super Regional or regional play and you're the away team. That's just the stupidest rule in the history. I know that's NCAA. This is college football playoff, but and that doesn't relate to this football game, but it's just so stupid. Nashfall 615 says, do you think our staff is slow playing the portal in order to flush the guys out just looking for a bag of money? We also have the advantage of spring semester starting later.
Yeah, again, I think that it boils down to you have to keep people on your roster. And like, if you like, you know, like if you like a kid, You're not going to go in there and rock the boat by bringing in a bunch of transfers when all that's going to do is push the kid you really like to the portal. And then there are kids that you know are going to be factors for you a year from now, and you know all the kids are asking for new deals or asking for money. You got to lock down your current roster first and then kind of cherry pick it. Tennessee, I don't think it's ever going to just live in the portal. Like they're going to get a handful of guys. I think they may actually take less players this year than at any point under Josh Heupel. We'll see. But it certainly feels like there will be the number will be smaller than a year ago.
Well, I mean, just look at a year ago where they were in the secondary. They were perfectly content with a lot of those guys that left. Okay. Where are they at the secondary going into 25? You don't want to lose the guys, right? I mean, you were content with your corners leaving you last year, most of them, but you don't want Ricky Gibson leaving you. You don't want Jermod McCoy leaving you. You don't want Boo Carter leaving you. So just the whole, just at that single position as an example, each year is different, okay? And when you have younger players that you like that can come back, you those are more valuable to you than going and replacing them in the portal with someone who doesn't know your system. So I think they like the youth on this roster, and a lot of those guys coming back, AP. And when you do, that's where your primary investment is. It's not in the flashy thing that's jumped into portal that day.
Correct, and that's the thing. The fans love flashy objects, and all these portal kids are flashy objects. Now, I'm not going to say that Tennessee won't. I mean, look, man. If Zachariah Branch calls Tennessee, Tennessee's picking up the phone. Like they're not going to go. Nope. We're not going to take that phone call. Like the elite guys, they're going to try to talk to them, try to be in play with them. You know, if it's a position they need to fill, but right now they're really just focused on the spots where they've got to fill in those voids. Obviously, getting Wendell Moy on Wednesday was a big deal. You know, I mean, it's a Polynesian kid. I think Nico and his family were very much on board with Wendell Moy. And again, like I've said, in this modern world, no player is safe, including the best player on your team, quarterback, third string kicker. They're all available. So I think getting Wendell Moy just helps you just kind of re-solidify everything with your quarterback, who he keeps getting better week by week.
Do you think we will be able to adequately replace the talent we are losing from the 2024 season to 2025, or do you expect a mild step back next year?
I think it depends on how much they grow, Hubs.
Right. I think that's what I was going to say. I think it depends on your development. I mean, you know, listen, I mean, let's take it quickly by position. Like where they are in the secondary, right? No offense to Will Brooks, but I mean, I think you can find some safety play there that you feel good about. Look at him at linebacker. They've had to play without Keenan Peely, you know, for so long. Everybody else is coming back as of right now. And you're adding some young talent for sure. Up front, you're losing interior defensive linemen. Okay, so Hobbs has got to take a step, right? Is the Wallace kid going to be a factor as a JUCO? Jackson Moy. I mean, I think the challenge up there in the interior is what's your depth number going to look like. And that's why they're trying to get a transfer piece there, just to make sure they've got the depth that they need. Now, the biggest question on this team in terms of step back or not step back is, well, what do they look like on the offensive line?
Yep.
What kind of play do they get out of the offensive line will say a lot about what kind of step forward or backwards this team takes next year.
Well, and what kind of step does Deshaun Bishop make? What kind of step does Peyton Lewis make? You know, who do they add in the portal?
And where's your commitment to young guys at the receiver position?
Yep.
Because you're going to have to play some of those guys.
ZJS Vols, bowl predictions for round one of the playoffs doesn't necessarily have to be from this game. So any upset you're calling, I know we talked about sleepers early, but anything bold in the first round?
I mean, I think Notre Dame has beaten Indiana, and I think that Texas has beaten Clemson. To me, the two potential upsets are SMU at Penn State and Tennessee at Ohio State, but I really don't like 9-8. You know, like if Ohio State was playing at Neyland, it really wouldn't be an upset. Like that 8-9 game every year is going to be about as even as it gets, and probably a little more special this year. But I look at SMU at Penn State, and then you know Tennessee, Ohio State.
My favorite question of the mailbag: any oh sheet moments from early enrollees so far?
Devon Morris has flashed. David Sanders looks the part. Christian Gass looks the part. You know, they're not doing enough to get, that type of response. But, like, you know, I think DeJuan Morris has been one where the staff's like, glad we got that one flipped around.
Yeah.
Good-looking group of athletes. What do they look like as football players? We'll find out. I mean, you remember a couple of years ago, everybody was gushing about John Slaughter, right? Like, oh, what you got in John? And I think John Slaughter's a good athlete. He's played well in special teams, but he hasn't found a niche in the secondary yet. So wait and see. But good-looking group of athletes.
Speaking of, who from the early enrollees would be the first off the bus?
First off the butt, like just in like looks?
Yeah, yeah, like eye test.
I mean, I don't know, Austin. I mean,
David Sanders, Marion Dye.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to take two linemen there. No offense to George. I mean, you're probably not putting him at the head of the list.
Vols underscore 127, in your opinion, what's the process for identifying talent in the transfer portal? Is it stats, potential, eligibility, asking price? Seems like Rodney's always found good additions every year that are low key, but on the offensive line, we pay way more money. What's the metric to identifying guys that we need?
It's just film. It's film. You watch the tape. Do you feel like that player can help you? Then you get into all the extracurriculars about money and fit and, you know, like sometimes they bring them in and like the kid just medically doesn't check off and thus, you know, Tennessee goes in a different direction.
I think too, I mean, Rodney's got 35 years of coaching experience, you know, so he's got a lot of ties. He can make a lot of calls about people because there's a good chance if there's a defensive lineman in the portal, Rodney knows somebody who knows him in some way, shape or form. The other thing too, because Rodney has developed his development of his guys and the numbers he's played with and the experience that they've had, they can go under the radar with a guy. I mean, who have they taken out of the transfer portal on the defensive line that you say, gotta have him as a day one starter? You haven't had that, but you have had that on the offensive line with John Campbell, mm-hmm. with Lance Hurd.
Gerald Mincy a couple years ago.
I mean, yeah. Andre was brought in to be a guy who plays quickly. I mean, they have had a greater need on the offensive side of the ball for impact guys than Rodney's had on the defensive side of the ball, which is why Rodney looks smarter because he's taken guys that he can play limited amount and continue to develop them and watch them grow as they go because he's not needed a guy to come in and say, hey, you're now our starting three technique. From the day we give you a helmet, you're the starting three technique. When Lance Hurd arrived on campus, you're the starting left tackle from day one.
Speaking of, VolFan23, over under 1.5 Heupel / Ellerby recruits starting on the offensive line next year.
A great number.
I can think of two right push. Now.
You'll say push at 1.5? I'll take the over. I'll take the over.
Who you got starting?
You said it was 1.5, right?
Yeah, 1.5.
All right, they're gonna have a high school recruit starter at center, and David Sanders is gonna start. So I'm at
right
two.
Tackle.
Yeah, I'm at two right there.
Yeah, so that off the top of my head, I'd say two. I'll take over. Smith 22-33. What SEC atmosphere would you compare to Ohio Stadium? I mean, none of us have covered a game there, so I don't know if we can answer that, right?
Nope, I've driven by and seen it, but I've never been in it. I've never covered a game there. I've got no idea what the atmosphere looks like. Yeah.
AP, is this the week we finally see a Jackson Ross fake punt?
No, they're not going to do that. Listen, if you know anything about Josh Heupel, he is not. He would rather just line up with his offense and run a play.
At your own 10 on 4th and 2, yes. That is true. The A-Dog, this will be interesting. With John Curry about to start a head coaching search at Wake Forest, any stories you can share about the 2017 search? Don't ruin your book one day, Hubs. I know you're right.
Well, I mean,
you want me to tell?
Well, wait, first of all, I spent an entire weekend after John Curry was dismissed and all the documents were released, diving into that whole couple of weeks. Back when we were at Rivals, you can still find it if you Google. It details a whole lot about the chaos that was that deal, but I didn't tell every story, Austin Price.
No, I mean, the day that I was driving to Lowe's and I'm on the phone, I think I'm actually on the phone with Hubs, and, you know, all of a sudden I look down and there's Jimmy Himes is on outside the lines reporting Jeff Brohm is done. Jeff Brohm is done to Tennessee. And I'm like, wow. So I'll go in. I'm get my stuff I need at Lowe's. By the time I got to my car, Hubs has called me and said, "Hey, John Curry called me and told me that's not true. They're not hiring Jeff Brohm. None of that's true. He's not even talked to him."
Yep, that's exactly what he did. He took care of me on that one. He called and said that story was not true. Early on in the coaching search, I got a couple of pictures of a selfie of John Curry at a random Waffle House with the "Hey, where am I at?" just kind of banter back and forth. And then obviously that went away very quickly when the search started taking on a whole different life that it took on, and everything went that way. But I think I had three. I had a Dave Doran hired story written. I had a Shiano hired story written. I had a Leach hired story written and ready to go. And obviously none of those three were completed. But
is he promoting from within at Wake Forest right now, or has he got a hire on his hands?
It sounds like he's got a hire. I don't know.
Get a search.
It sounds like there may be a search.
However.
It was one of, I mean, they're all wild. I mean, you go back to the Butch Jones hire. I mean, the difference was, like, with Dave Hart, he was like, "Hey, I'm going to," you know, he just lands a plane in Stillwater and goes to Gundy's house to interview him, right? He goes to Louisville. Everybody knows where he's at. He's in Cincinnati. Everybody knows he's, or in Lexington, he's interviewing. Like, there was no real cloak and dagger deal. With John, it was a lot of, "Where am I going? Where am I at? What are we doing? You know, throw you off the trail here," and that type of thing. Just two totally different styles of searches.
We don't have much time left, but I do want to work through a couple more. This is Red Beard of VFL. What wrinkle would surprise the mods on Saturday? And yes, let's get the joke out of the way that there's going to be no new wrinkles, Tennessee offensively, defensively, or special teams. The wrinkle that would surprise me, simply because, you know, to steal a phrase from Hubs, believe it to see it, would be if they ran their 11 personnel, but technically put that slot receiver of Squirrels out, make it Ethan Davis. We talk about it. It's nice on paper. Until I see it, I don't believe that. That would be the one that surprises me from a personnel standpoint. Anything from you guys?
23 on offense. That would shock me.
Yeah, I mean, in this game, I agree. Now, spring practice, I think that's definitely happening. I think next year that's 23. Definitely happening. But in this game, you know, unless there's some type of specialty play, like, you know, the backside Georgia verse, or Rams coming in for one play, I'll have to see it to believe it.
Volunteer 87, how is Dante Thornton looking?
I think he's healthy. I think he's fine. You know, I mean, the question is, you know, does he hold up all the way through? I mean, you know, he's gotten banged up pretty frequently throughout his career, but I mean, I think he's healthy and ready to go on Saturday night.
Last one's going to go to Andrew Himmelman. Who's a possible big Tennessee transfer candidate after the playoffs? I don't think it's necessarily they're trying to departmentalize playoffs after the playoffs. I mean, if you like a guy that's in the portal right now, you're going to go pursue him, right?
Does he mean that, or somebody leaving the team?
Yeah, or that, yeah.
I mean,
again, anybody is possible. I mean, I'm not trying to scare everybody.
Right.
Nobody may leave. But I'm telling you that all these kids want new deals. Agents are driving this stuff, and then they're the ones saying, "Well, you got to get in the portal. You got to test your market. Tennessee will pay once they see you're in the portal."
Yep. I mean, anything's possible. I mean, it is. I mean, that's just the world we live in. And everybody has to get used to it, because it's not going away. The portal's not going away anytime soon. Instant eligibility is not going away. And everybody's looking for a new, and you know, until the market itself settles back down, everybody's going to be trying to drive the price up. I mean, we all talked this year about, or there was all this national talk about $20 million roster or whatever. I mean, what's that going to be next year? $25 million? $24? $28? I mean, the cost is not going down, Austin. I mean, you're not getting guys cheaper than you got them 2 years ago.
It's not. It is definitely not. Not whatsoever.
That's the world we're in right now.
Speaking of anything is possible, if you need a good watch this weekend, go on YouTube. Anything is possible. Google Anything is Possible. Brent Hubs. edition of that show with Halloran Hilton.
When were you on that show, Brent?
Like 2 years ago.
I'm gonna have to do that. I'm gonna have to Google and check it out. That's a great production.
Get yourself ready for the college football playoff by not watching.
We're gonna watch it on the way to Columbus.
Heck yeah!
Also, speaking off of the road again,
Kevin Garnett style, anything is possible. I want Hubs to scream it like Garnett did after winning the NBA Finals. All right, big thank you to you, everybody sending in their questions. I know we didn't get to all of them, but I do, as always, appreciate that. We got tons of stuff going on the site right now. $1 for 7 days, big game week, biggest game of the year, right? Don't hold anything back. Tennessee, Ohio State in the college football playoffs. Transfer portal news happening by the minute, it feels like. Recruiting never stops. Number one Tennessee basketball. No better place to be stayed up to date on all that information and more than on the General's Quarters over at BallQuest.com. You can join us today. $1 for 7 days.
Yeah, really nice Dan Fouts Waterboy reference there.
Oh, the don't hold anything back.
Thank you. Good job.
Thank you very much. And thank you, as always, to Exterior Home Solutions for being a proud presenting sponsor of this show. For Austin Price, Brent Hubs, I am Eric Kane. This has been the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on BallQuest.